Your heart beats faster and faster.
I left my home where the dead never rose and streets of gold have yet to find. Ladies and gentlemen, that was a quote by Flogging Molly, the band, and this is the Ghostman and Demon Hunter show.
Oh yeah, paranormal broadcasting, where we put it all together so you can tear it all apart.
Hey gang, we are back in studios live and we'll be in the G&D chat room all night long.
And you can log into that chat room by going to our website at www.ghostanddemon.com.
.com, and this is the Ghostman, Sean B.
And this is Nathan S., a.k.a. the Demon Hunter.
And Demon Hunter, this is the Sunday, March 9th broadcast of the Ghostman and Demon Hunter show.
Ooh, the Ghostman and Demon Hunter show is independently produced by Nathan Schoonover and Sean Burris and is broadcast live on OmniSound and KarmaCast Radio and is recorded for I Am Haunted, Blog Talk, and isn't there somebody else out there? Right, Planet Paranormal.
Planet Paranormal, oh my god, you forgot him.
Couldn't forget them.
You could.
It's your line.
Oh, it's my turn. Okay, guys, tonight we got a great one for you. Tonight's guest, Stanton T. Friedman, author of Flying Saucers and Science. It's going to be a hot one, folks. Tonight we're talking saucers, little green men, and anal probing. That's right, tonight on the Ghostman and Demon Hunter show.
Ooh, it just sounds uncomfortable, Sean, but hell. The Ghostman and Demon Hunter show is beyond the normal broadcast, and it starts right now.
What an excellent day for an exorcism.
And now, the original Bad Boys of Paranormal, and your host for tonight's show, Ghostman and Demon Hunter.
Yes.
What's going on, Demon Hunter? What's going on, everybody?
Oh, it's good to have to be back in the studio, Sean. I'm tired.
I'm tired too. Life of a rock star, guys. We've been on the road. Me and Nate last weekend. We were in beautiful Decatur, Illinois, at the Haunted Lincoln Theater, weren't we, real little brother?
We were, and I love the Haunted Lincoln Theater. Except I do have to say, my only downside to the Haunted Lincoln Theater is the fact that they're still only selling Pepsi.
Well,
I want Coke.
That's. So if the vendors at the Decatur Theater, Lincoln Theater, are listening, next time, Demon Hunter would like Coca-Cola products only, please, folks.
That's right. I had to send, we didn't have our intern, we didn't have, you know, Gigi was busy watching the movie. I had to go out and get my own Coke. I mean, it's not like those guys who were sitting next to us, you know, with Scott L., the radio star, next to us.
I was going to say, you should have sent Scott L. to do it.
Amber fed me. I gotta say that. Amber fed me. She was wonderful.
She didn't feed me though, Demon Hunter. I had to buy my own McDonald's.
Well, you went back to the hotel room a little early that night, Sean. I had to stick around, so.
The Ghost Man was feeling a little under the weather, folks, but I am back once again, and me and Demon Hunter is in full thrust tonight. Thrusting. We're thrusting for it. You guys get that? Thrusting. Like a porno thrusting. But, you know, I wanted to talk about some crazy stuff today, Demon Hunter. This has been a crazy week, a crazy life, if you will.
Oh, I'm getting reports again, Sean, that people lost our audio.
Oh, no, not again.
I know. Here we are. We've got so much to cover. We got so little time. This is going to be saved for archives and everything else. So
right.
I'm going to go in here, and I'm going to see if I can pull up our sound real quick.
That's fine, Nathan. Listen, Demon Hunter, that's the problem. See, sometimes we lose the audio, folks. That's the best parts of the show. So when you hear dead air, that's when the good stuff's happening, let me tell you. But we got a few in the chat room tonight. I'm getting a little feedback, Demon Hunter.
Let me see what I can do for you there. How's that?
Check 1, 2, 3. It sounds perfect.
Okay.
As always, because everybody knows the Demon Hunter is running the techno side of the boards, and I'm running the, how would you say, the educated side of the board?
I wouldn't say that. I wouldn't say that, Tim.
We got the G&D show monkeys working the boards, and... Oh, man, what a day, what a week, guys. Like I said, we were at the Decatur Theater last weekend, and if you guys ever get a chance to go out with Demon Hunter, you got to sleep with the guy. You know what I'm saying?
Hey.
Well, I didn't sleep with him, but I slept next to him.
We had separate beds.
It's an honor and a privilege. And, of course, Gigi, she was snuggling up in bed with me, and... It was a great time. We had a great time. I did feel a little sick, though, Saturday, so I apologize to everybody that was there. I was a little out of the norm for me. The ghost man was in the hospital, 3 weeks ago, brother? And I just my stomach started hurting, and I guess 12 hours of broadcasting was a little much.
Hey, bro, just take a five-second pause. It's not going to sound like anything on the archive, but I'm going to stop the system and start it again. Let's see if that does anything at all, so that our glorious fans can still hear us. I certainly hope so. All right, you can go.
Okay, we're going again, guys. We're back on. Can you hear us? We hope so. If you can't, this will be on the archives later. But as we mentioned tonight, we got Stanton T. Friedman on. Kind of exciting show, guys, because... As Demon Hunter knows, he's known as the godfather, the big man of the Roswell, the crashes in New Mexico, the little green men. And this is a big shot, guys. He's got a new book coming out. It's called Saucers in Science, and we're real excited about that and an honor to have Stanton on the show.
Indeed we are.
Yes, we are. And you know what? It brings up a great thing, because here in Indiana, just a... about 3 days ago in, I think it was Terre Haute, Indiana, there was actual reports, Demon Hunter, that came into the military base out that way of flying saucers over the west of Indiana, the west side of Indianapolis. It was crazy. It was in the papers. People were talking about it. Some people said they seen these things like 6 feet off the ground. One lady said, I was outside looking around my house and I seen this gray flying saucer with lights on it, and her and her husband took off. But you know what gets me, Demon Hunter?
What's that?
Well, you know, you always got these people, especially in Indiana, and I love the Hoosier State, but you always got these people that call into the news, you know, when a big tornado comes through, and they're like, woohoo! Oh, my God, me and my family of 14 was out in the back of the pickup truck, and we was videotaping this huge tornado coming through the trailer park, you know. And they got the camera, and they're in the back of the pickup, and the tornado's ripping through, which tornado's a very terrible thing, guys. I don't want to make fun of that. But you never see a video camera out in Indiana when a UFO's in the air. That's what I'm saying. So next time a UFO lands, I hope it lands in Whiteland, Indiana, the home of the Ghost Man, and it lands right outside the Ghost Man and Demon Hunter studios, because I will go out there with my Hi-8 camcorder, and I will ask the little green man or gray man or purple man, whatever they may be, take me to your leader, because I want him to take me away, Demon Hunter. I'm done. I will do the show from outer space.
Oh, Sean, you know, I myself have seen a UFO. I can't say it was a flying saucer, but I've seen a UFO, and I didn't have a camera, so...
Yeah.
But it looked like two stars up in the Milky Way, and they kind of, like, crisscrossed, and they were just standing still for a good, like, 30, 40 seconds, and then they just started crisscrossing around each other and shot off in different directions so quickly, and I can't imagine what it could have been.
See, that's wild, because I've seen shooting stars, I've seen the meteor showers... but these people are reporting, Demon Hunter, my brother. These people are reporting these things are like 6 to 10 feet off the ground, hovering over their backyards, right? You got Fido, you got Spot, the family dog out back, and he's barking at this flying plate. Looks like a Dixie plate, you know, the little paper plates flying in the backyard. And some of them says it sits there for 5 to 10 minutes and nobody seems to go inside and get the camera. But, you know, maybe if it happens to me, maybe I'll be shy or I'll be so shocked I can't run inside and get another one. I don't know. But I'm waiting on E.T. to come down and tell me a whole new way of doing things. You know what I'm saying?
Well, Sean, I'm waiting for E.T. to just come down and take you away. But
yeah. You know what? I can't find my horn, folks. I was looking through the studio. I could find my bell, but I can't find the horn anywhere. I don't know what happened to it. Used to be a horny G&D show, and now it's just a bell show.
And on that note, Sean, the comments of Sean Bur- Wait, no, that's why I recorded this. Hold on.
Yeah, the comments of Sean Burris do not represent those of Ghostman and Demon Hunter or their affiliates.
There, that's better. Why don't you go to a news story there, Sean? Because I'm working on trying to get our sound working perfectly here, so...
I don't want to do a news story, Demon Hunter, but...
Do a news story, Sean.
I wanted to do one here because everybody knows that the Demon Hunter is American-Irish or Irish-American, as Demon Hunter would say.
I'm not Irish. What are you talking about?
But I got a story. It says, a drink a day for a longer life. Okay, you guys ready for this? It's by Michael Kahn. Of course, this comes from the Associated Press, our good friends over there. It says, drinking is healthy, Demon Hunter, regardless of what you told me last weekend.
You must be the healthiest man on the face of the earth, Sean.
I am. Exercise is healthy, and doing a little both is even healthier. Danish researchers reported on Wednesday, people who neither drink nor exercise have 30 to 49% higher risk of heart disease, Demon Hunter, than people who do one or both of the activities. The researchers said in the European Heart Journal, the main finding is there seems to be an additional beneficial effect of drinking 1 to 2 drinks per day and doing at least moderate physical activity, said Morten Grønbæk of the University of Southern Denmark, who led the study. Several major studies have been found that light to moderate drinking, up to 2 drinks a day on a regular basis, is associated with a lower risk of heart disease. And some have also found this leads to lower risk of some cancers. You got that, guys? It's helping you on cancer and heart disease. Okay, but the Danish study, one of the largest of its kind, to examine the combined effect of drinking and exercise, found there were additional protective effects gained from doing both. The researchers collected information on the drinking and exercise habits of nearly 12,000 men and women aged 20 years or older between 1981 and 1983. Over the next 20 years, some 1,200 of the participants died from heart disease and about 5,900 died from other causes. Non-drinkers had a 30% to 31% higher risk of heart disease compared to the moderate drinkers, no matter the amount of physical activity they undertook. Moderate consumption was defined as between 1 to 14 drinks per week. So, Demon Hunter, you got that down. But,
just keep going.
Those who exercised at least moderately were able to reduce their risk of heart disease, an important finding for people who abstained because of religious beliefs or other health issues such as pregnancy, the researcher said. People who had the lowest risk of dying from any cause were physically active, moderate drinkers, while those at highest risk were the physically inactive, heavy drinkers. And that's what the study found, guys. And, of course, that comes from the Associated Press. Thank you, guys. Thank you. The G&D Show loves you. But that's it, guys. Go out, get some Guinness today while you're sitting on the...
The comments of Sean Burris do not represent those of Ghostman and Demon Hunter or their affiliates.
No. Listen. While you're sitting on the rowing machine and you're rowing, make sure you got like a little beer... What do you call that? The helmet with the 2 beer cans at the side, and you got straws coming in from both sides. Make sure you consume at least 1 to 14 drinks per week, guys. Not all in one day like Demon Hunter, but...
Oh, yeah. That's good.
Anyway.
Sean. That's good.
Hey, Sean. I thought that was a good
one. We gotta take
drink a day.
We got to take a quick break and test our sound system here because we are not broadcasting on any network currently. So we're going to
take a quick break.
We'll be right back.
Stick around. We'll be back, guys.
This is Doug.
And this is Scott L. from
Ghostly Talk. Reminding you to tune into Ghostly Talk on Sundays from 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. Eastern Time.
Heck yeah, Doug. Visit Ghostly Talk at www.ghostlytalk.com, one of the world's premier paranormal talk shows.
Totally, Scott. Download hundreds of free show archives, read the world's latest paranormal news, and be sure to visit our forums.
Pimping the grassroots paranormal community since 2002.
Dead air never sounded so good on Ghostly Talk.
All right, we're back. Hopefully people will be able to hear us now. You know, I don't know what's going on. I'm not getting anything. So,
hey guys, if you're a first time listener to the Ghostman Demon Hunter show, get used to this.
Yeah, really. Apparently this is what we have to look forward to. Okay, we're at least back on at least one system. We're definitely on KarmaCast. And let's see what's going on over here with this. I still don't see anything coming over. Nothing over OmniSound. So let's tell people to go to KarmaCast.
Everybody go to KarmaCast.
Yeah, that helps.
You guys are all drunk.
There we go. Now, anyway. Where were we? We were talking about, you know what, Sean? That just threw me for quite a loop. Why don't you read one more news story and then I'll go into our weird location.
Listen, let me tell you something about news stories, guys. I got a hot one, right? This comes out of FoxNews.com. It's a report. It says everybody's going crazy, Demon Hunter, over these Elmo dolls, right?
Okay.
Elmo likes to play with you and all this stuff, right? Well, this one's titled Elmo Doll Threatens to Kill Toddler. You guys ready for this?
Sure, why not?
Demon Hunter?
Sure.
Okay, it says, it sounds like something the talking doll Chucky from the movies might say. Kill James. Instead, a Florida family says the threat to their toddler is coming from a talking Elmo doll. The Bowman family of Lithia, Florida, said an Elmo doll belonging to their 2-year-old son, James, began to spout death threats towards him after they changed its batteries. Okay? This comes from TV.
I only wanted Duracell.
Elmo wants to kill you. No, but this says the Elmo Knows Your Name doll started saying kill James in a sing-song voice, the site reports. It's not something that really you would think would ever come out of a toy, James's mother Melissa told the site. But once I heard, I was just kind of distraught.
Gee, I can't imagine why.
The toy's manufacturer, Fisher-Price, said it will issue the Bowmans a voucher for a replacement doll. Okay. So that's it, guys. Elmo doll threatens to kill toddler. So apparently there's an Elmo doll.
Not all the... Don't get us sued by Sesame Street here, Sean.
No, it'd be Fisher-Price. Demon Hunter, when you get the official statement from the attorneys, it'll be, we are suing you, the Fisher-Price company.
I see. And you know exactly, Sean, what I'm going to tell them.
Right.
The comments of Sean Burris do not represent those of Ghostman and Demon Hunter or their affiliates.
So go ahead.
What do you think about that, everybody? You got an Elmo doll, huh?
I think Elmo's been tossing a few back with Sean Burris, and that's the problem.
It's the Ghostman. Sean B. no longer exists. It's just the Ghostman. That's all I got. But Fisher-Price, they're being nice about it. They're issuing the Bowman family a voucher for a replacement doll. Hopefully the replacement doll doesn't say it wants to kill the mother.
That would be good. I would like to know that Elmo isn't out to get somebody. That would make me happy.
You know, I'm sitting here, Demon Hunter, in the G&D Show Studios, and of course we share this with the kids, and I have a big talking Elmo chair that Doug from Ghostly Talk bought Drake, my youngest, and when I sit in it, and I do sit in it quite often, usually naked when I sit in, but when you sit in this talking Elmo chair, it says I love you and stuff like that. So I'm hoping tonight after the broadcast it might spout out a death threat or something. I don't know.
I'm kind of hoping it spouts out a death threat too.
You would, you Jersey freak.
Well, speaking of Jersey and our friends Mark and Mark over at Weird New Jersey, why don't we go over and check out the weird U.S. location of the week? This week, the weird location would be the Paper House of Rockport, Massachusetts.
Ooh.
It was in the early roaring 20s when Ellis F. Steinman was building his own home. A wooden frame was completed, and it came to outfit it with insulation. Steinman decided to use paper for this purpose and began collecting newspapers. He pressed them together into 1-inch thick materials and stuffed the house frame with it. Then he left it like that. No wood, no clapboard, no siding, just paper. And the paper house...
Wood.
The paper house of Rockport, Massachusetts was born. Steinman had always been notorious as someone who, of somewhat an amateur inventor, and simply decided that he wanted to see if he could put a paper house together.
Yeah.
He just started mixing it with glue and varnish to make the walls, and the paper house was completed in 1924. Steinman lived in it until 1930, and it still stands today. All the papers are the same as they were decades later. The furniture inside the house is made of pressed paper. There is a piano that is coated with paper, but made of wood, and the materials over the brick fireplace are, you guessed it, paper. So, if you want to check out the paper house of Rockport, Massachusetts, you can drive up to Rockport, follow Route 102 to Pigeon Cove, take a left onto Curtis Street, then another onto Pigeon Hill Street, pay the $1.50 to get in, they accept only paper, no plastic, and check out the paper house of Rockport, Massachusetts. Or you can head on over to our friends Mark and Mark from Weird New Jersey and Weird US at weirdus.com.
Now listen, did you say Pigeon, what did you say, Pigeon Roost?
It's Pigeon Road and, or Pigeon Cove and Pigeon Hill Street.
Now, if I had to guess, I would say a lot of rapings happen out there, because it just sounds like a hillbilly kind of thing, a name of the road and everything. How many young males have come up missing?
The comments of Sean Burris do not represent those of Ghostman and Demon Hunter or their affiliates.
The Ghostman and Demon Hunter show does not believe that that there are a lot of rapings taking place over at Pigeon Hill Road. Property values plummet and they blame us. No.
Now, does this guy allow smoking in his paper house of any kind?
Well, you know, he does. It does have electricity. It has a fireplace, and it did have running water. It's now used as a museum. The Steinman family has it open as a museum. But originally, I don't know. He may have. You know, it was the 20s. Who didn't smoke?
Yeah, I was going to say, everybody smoked in the 20s. Even the dogs smoked in the 20s, folks. I just can't see. That's ridiculous. A paper house, and it stood that long. Now they put up these houses, drywall. They call them Cracker Jack's houses. They don't even stand up through the first hard storm, you know? So... They just don't make things like they used to, Demon Hunter, I'm telling you.
Maybe the newspapers were just tougher back then.
Hey, I got another one for you, Demon Hunter, if your mind can wrap around this. I don't know if it can.
Well, let's give it a try.
Okay, this comes from our friends at the Associated Press as well. Guys, are you ready for this? I can feel you guys out there. I can feel you touching yourselves. So you ready? Spielberg preps paranormal social networking site. That's right, folks, Spielberg. TechCrunch is hearing from multiple sources that Hollywood heavyweight I messed up that story, Demon Hunter. Okay, start over. Let's... Okay. Spielberg, whose movies include Close Encounters and Third Kind and a bunch of others, Poltergeist, E.T., and the extraterrestrial Casper and Men in Black, is said to have experienced paranormal encounters himself, both as a child and as an adult. The new site is said to be in production now, being created by a team in L.A., and will apparently be launched in the next few months. So you got Spielberg, the big man. He's coming out. He's got a paranormal networking site where you guys can go on there, and you can tell about your paranormal experiences and stuff. And I don't know if they got any awards or anything like that going on yet, but apparently it could lead to a big movie role for Mr. Spielberg. So if you guys got any good ideas...
From Mr. Spielberg, not for Mr. Spielberg.
Well, I'm sure...
He doesn't play in the movie, Sean. He directs them.
That's true. He directs him. But, you know, if you guys got any good ideas you don't want to give them to me and Demon Hunter to write about to make us famous, go ahead and send them to Spielberg, and I'm sure he'll make a few bucks off of it.
Yeah, because, you know, we can only do a little bit, you know, he can only do a little bit more than we could, but sure, sure, send him to Spielberg.
All right, right. Well, you know, I went to school with Spielberg, but...
yeah, Marvin know. Spielberg. It's not the same, Sean.
You know, we're always talking about Ghost on this show, and now we're starting to branch off. The week before last, we had on the Dog Man of Michigan, so we're branching off to the werewolves. And now this week, we're going to aliens. But we're going to go back here real quick, Demon Hunter. We got office workers scared off by ghosts. Of course, this comes out of the Associated Press as well. It says workers in Glasgow City Center office are too scared to work late because they're convinced it's haunted. They claim kettles are switched on and off. One room is always freezing cold, and there are strange noises. Now workers like Kerr Armstrong at recruitment firm Melville Craig are afraid to be alone after dark in the office they moved into 2 weeks ago. They think the eerie happenings are caused by the ghost of Madeline Smith. She lived in the Blythewood Square building with her wealthy family in the 1800s. The daughter of famous architect James Smith, she was accused of poisoning her French lover, Emile L. Angler, with arsenic. Many people at the time believed she committed the crime, but the case against the 22-year-old was not proven at the High Court in Edinburgh. Marketing consultant Melaine Harvey said yesterday, "It's a scary thought to be in here yourself, knowing that Madeline could be standing right behind you." So there you go, ladies.
It's kind of how I feel, knowing when the ghost man is standing right behind me.
I haven't been poisoned with arsenic yet, but there you go, ladies. If you want to poison your boyfriend with arsenic, apparently you'll be a ghost someday, and you can haunt your house, I guess. So.
I was trying to click the wrong other button.
The comments of Sean Burrs do not represent those of Ghostman and Demon Hunter or their affiliates.
We get 1 week up. We screw everything up. I just wanted people to think that didn't. I wanted people to know that the Ghostman and Demon Hunter show does not say that people should go out and poison their boyfriends with arsenic. We're definitely against that. But Sean, we got to go to a quick break and come back with Gigi with Inside the Horror.
Oh, geez. Stick around, guys. We got the gore girl up next. She's sure to have something good for you.
And while we're waiting, why don't we take a quick flashback and listen to a Dead Letters with Chrissy P.
Let's do it.
Once, upon a midnight dreary, while I pondered weak and weary over many a quaint and curious volume of forgotten lore.
Welcome to Dead Letters. I'm Chrissy P., short fiction writer and avid reader, and here's my picks for paranormal reading this month. Urban legends are stories, so it seems only natural that they'd make great fodder for fiction. This episode's picks are fictional renderings of urban legends, and all of them are entertaining reads. Every year, the e-zine Toasted Cheese runs a little contest they call Dead of Winter. The biggest stipulation is that the story you write must be set in either fall or winter, and you must write on the theme that they provide. Last year's theme happened to be urban legends, and the winning stories have been posted in their current March issue. Actually, shameless plug, my story King of Bull, about an entrepreneur who's made himself rich manufacturing a beer called Urban Legend, only to find that he's violated some unwritten rule in the universe, took first place. Check it out, because I even put a shout-out to Weird US in there. But the other contest winners have done a fabulous job. In Vespers, by Robert T. Knight, Richard takes a break at a roadside bar, only the characters he meets inside are, well, not who you'd expect. If you've got a strong stomach and you like to squirm, check out Faye Bowman's Movement of Skin. I promise you, you won't be looking at taxidermy the same way again. And Tara McDaniel's The Purchased Bride is unique because of its strong first-person narrative description of what happens to a small town when a stranger shows up. What gives these stories added appeal is the temptation to identify the urban legends the writers used. Head on over and visit www.toastedcheese.com. That's www.toasted-cheese.com. And my other pick? Not in the same magazine, but an unusual incorporation of the famous Bloody Mary legend called On a Definite Path to the Moon by Abigail Keller. It's about a girl who is struggling with the impending death of her mother. It's set in a summer camp, and Keller has depicted the magic and creepiness of those camps with vivid imagery. You can even smell the pine needles. It's in the e-zine The Dirty Napkins inaugural issue at www.dirtynapkin.com. You can find links to these stories over on the Ghostman and Demon Hunter Show forums under the Dead Letter section. Until next time, happy reading, and here's to sleeping with the lights on.
Experience the charm and mystery of the Deep Sound through ghost stories by attending the highly respected Roswell Ghost Tour. Your experienced guide will lead you on this two-hour outdoor walking tour through the historic district of Roswell. One of the highlights of the tour is a visit to Founders Cemetery, the burial site of Roswell King, where bodies are buried beneath modern streets and houses. Grand Greek Revival mansions and humble mill workers' apartments are some of the haunted sites you'll see on this mile of easy walking. Check RoswellGhostTour.com for the current schedule. Tours run most Friday and Saturday nights year-round, and private tours may be arranged. Reservations are required. Call 770-649-9922. That's 770-649-9922 for more information. Happy haunting from Roswell Ghost Tours.
Hi, this is Jeff Belander with GhostVillage.com, author and lecturer and all-around weird guy. And when I'm not out ghost hunting, I'm listening to the Ghostman and Demon Hunter Show.
I'm back. You know what? If one more thing goes wrong tonight, Sean, one more thing. Well, no, we're having Stanton Friedman on tonight. I ain't shutting down my side of the show.
You know what's so funny is I talked to Stanton earlier this week, and I talked to him, and he's such an amazing cat. Demon Hunter had to tell him about the time change today. So it was good thing you talked to him, brother, because he'd been waiting on us at like midnight.
Well, no, heck, he told me. What are you talking about? He was the smart one in it all.
See, but, I'm telling you guys what. Stanton Friedman is an alien.
Stanton Friedman can tell time, and that's just really cool.
We are going to have a live alien on the G&D show tonight. My brother, the Demon Hunter.
All right, before Sean, like, makes us an enemy of our guest tonight, I'm going to ask the important question of the night. Oh my gosh. Welcome back, Gigi.
What's up, Ghostman and Demon Hunter? How are you doing tonight?
I dream of your body against mine.
I did too. I miss you.
Is that a mirror in your pocket?
Because I could see myself in them.
Yeah, that's right. And then pants. You guys are dirty.
And the family rating goes down. I'm just going to lean back and let you guys take it.
Hold on, what's another?
I'm kind of in shock because we're getting faster and faster with losing the family rating. I think next time it'll just be the second that the music's played, and we just lost the family rating.
Sean just waits for you to come on so he can, like, knock the family rating out now.
Gigi, did it hurt when you fell? I messed it up. Did it hurt? Why? What?
Sean, the question is, are you in pain? Because it must have hurt when you fell from heaven.
There you go, Demon Hunter. That's why you're my wingman.
It would have taken us a half hour to get through the joke. Oh, God.
That's okay. It took us a half an hour to get on the air. Are you kidding me?
I think it's contagious because right before we came on, a little bit as the show was starting, I was having such bad tech problems, and I was like, oh, no. Oh, no, 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 not
Where
now.
Where are you at, right?
Aren't you glad we spent so much money to build a studio, Sean?
Yes. Money well spent, brother. Hey, Gigi, are you laying in bed right now?
I am in my towel laying here.
Oh.
When does the show go so NC-17?
I don't... I don't know what's up, Gigi. Sean is just in a mood. I don't know.
I know which mood he's in, too. Good times.
Called the corner pub was open late this evening, guys. I'm sorry.
Man.
Hey, I just want to say one thing real quick, guys, because I don't know what's going on with Demon Hunter and me. I don't know if we're going to have a St. Paddy's Day show or what, but guys, half the G&D show is Irish. The rest is douche.
Dutch.
Is what? I was like, how do you want to say that again?
I'm Dutch, you. Oh.
I'm sorry, Demon Hunter. I'm sorry. I apologize.
I will have you know, I was raised by an Irish family, Sean, so.
One half of the Ghostman Demon Hunter show is Irish. The other half is Demon Hunter. Dutch. And I just wanted to say that we got St. Paddy's Day coming up March 17th, everybody. And, hey, Aaron Grobra, everybody. That's right. Make sure you get out
there.
Well,
you know what today's...
You're breaking up there, Sean.
Today was Chicago Southside Irish Parade. And you know
that's
huge in Chicago. That's like the wildest, craziest night of drinking you could possibly have. So you know where I'll be after show.
Well, next Sunday, Gigi, we're not going to be doing a live show probably because I will be out at the... Just Say No to Orbs tour.
Oh.
And for all the ladies listening, I say yes to Orbs. So I just want to tell everybody that.
Yes, John. Everyone knows that. So we will be trying to put out something via broadcast. Hopefully we'll get something out there. But just in case we don't, we'll definitely have
no
something
up on
our
ramblings case. From Sean?
No. I was afraid of what might happen the night before St. Paddy's Day if we let Sean on the air. But Gigi... You were with us last week at the Dead of Winter Film Festival.
I was, guys. I was hanging out with the Ghostman and Demon Hunter in Decatur. Beautiful,
she slept
cold,
with me.
Bitter Decatur.
She slept with me, everybody.
I did. I slept with the Ghostman while we were in Decatur. It was awesome. It was good times. We had nothing but the famous Gore Girl towel between us. It was excellent.
Until you went to sleep, and then there wasn't that between
And the family rating was just blown out of the water. Good time.
The editing will take days. The archive will be available next Friday.
I fall asleep next to the ghost man. And I told Demon Hunter that. He found out the hard way in Gettysburg.
I heard about that. Sometimes Nathan wakes up crying at night.
I learned to sleep with my back to the wall. Yes. I know all the jokes. Back to the Dead of Winter Film Festival.
You know what? It was an amazing fest, guys. We had a lot of great pieces from some awesome indie filmmakers. It was good times. We had a lot of cool people hanging out. You know, you guys did a live broadcast. We got to meet, you know, some crazy fans and stuff like that. But there was one movie that I did not get to review that night.
Now, which movie could that possibly be?
I don't know.
Candy Stripers.
Shazza, come on, Under the Rainbow. Come on. Troy saved probably what is the best for last. It is American Ghost Watchers. And yeah. We kind of closed shop early, so I didn't get to do the review on air. So I wanted to devote the time this week because that's a movie that needs a little bit more in a couple seconds, guys. So did you guys happen to see that movie?
I think I did sit in on the last movie of the day. I'm pretty sure people might not have seen or heard me in the theater, but I was there.
Oh. I'm peeing in a cup right now. I'm so excited. I'm peeing in a cup.
I don't think they quite heard the Demon Hunter during that last movie. I don't know. From what I heard, it was heard miles around, Nathan. That's all I know.
So what was the last movie of the day, Gigi?
It was American Ghost Watchers, directed by Andrew Kaiser, written by Tanya and Andrew Kaiser. I almost just called him Andy. I don't know. That's kind of like revealing information about us in a towel together. I don't know. It's a little too personal. Andrew Kaiser. That movie was... definitely the best of the movie, the best movie of the day, I'd have to say. And I'm not saying it just because you know, of personal reasons or whatever. But no, it really was the best essence film of the day, because I, of all the movies I saw, we saw a lot of great movies, you know, a lot of good stuff, but this one captured what a lot of people, you know, wouldn't even dare to speak. I mean, it captured the stereotypes of the paranormal community. And if we can't laugh at ourselves, guys, you know, then what hope is there for us? So I have to give props to it.
Yeah.
Thanks, Sean. Thanks for coming in with that. Thanks. Where's the gong? Where's the bell? Whatever you have this week.
Demon Hunter took it.
He took it. He confiscated your weaponry.
Took my horny horn.
He was not. He was misbehaving with it.
Wow, he is in the mood. Horny horn. Took your horny horn. Okay, so we're going to have to continue on. Press on without the horny horn. Seriously, this movie, I'll just give a basis for the audience of what it's about. It's a total satire, soul comedy, and it's about, you know, a conference, a paranormal conference in a haunted location. Everybody's kind of, you know, showing up for the weekend to investigate and do things like that. But, oh, hold on 1 second, guys. I see a Gigi fan, and I'm like, oh, no. Because remember what happened the last time I saw a Gigi fan?
You're like surrounded by your harem when you do this show. You got all these naked chicks.
No, I'm sorry. No, it's kind of funny, because you wouldn't think that certain people listen to the show, and we have fans of all backgrounds and styles and kinds and prices, and I mean, it's fine.
Right.
Stop buying fans, Gigi.
A couple prostitutes and a pimp stopped by.
No. This movie, everybody's in the convention, and they're ghost hunting for the weekend, and there's an award ceremony at the end, and all sorts of good stuff. And it basically takes every stereotype in the paranormal community, all, you know, the good and the bad, and it just makes fun of it. It pokes fun at it. And, I mean, the film actually is, it's sort of a revelation. It's sort of kind of a slap in the face, like, hey, guys, you know, if we keep, you know, acting like this and we keep bickering, you know, we're going to hide all the really great evidence, you know, and all this competition is just going to do us in. You know, we're not getting any further in perfecting techniques or, you know, proving paranormal, you know, research if all we do is bicker and fight and compete. And it was a total wake-up call, and it had a message at the end, you know, and it was like, come on, you know, we don't need all this stuff to do this. We should all be getting along. We should all be sharing information. We should all be helping each other. But
sharing.
I guess it's a little too much to ask in this world, so.
Everybody needs to be sharing.
I don't know what you want them to share, Sean, but I was thinking more along the lines of other things.
Okay,
non-liquidy things. We don't need to share ectoplasm, okay? That's all I'm saying.
Okay.
No, but you guys have seen the film, and I mean, it's a total... I hear things in the background. I don't know what's going on. No, the film was, for what it was, I mean, it was shot extremely low budget. I mean, it was, you know, wasn't shot on a professional, you know, camera, wasn't shot by a professional crew, and I was surprised and amazed at what they had accomplished for what they had. I mean, here's, you know, the Kaisers, you know, they're not, you know, Spielbergs running around, you know, indie fest to indie fest. You know, they just got together, had a great idea, made this film, and it's wow. It really shocked me to see what a great job they did. And I mean, they didn't make a lot of amateur mistakes that people make, like, you know, moving the camera around and trying to get a Blair Witch feel when it should be tripod, or, you know, stationary shots. And I mean, they didn't try to do any crazy Pulp Fiction type shots for scenes that didn't need it. You know, it was just a great film for what it was. And, I mean, I give them props. I was really surprised. That's why I was excited to see the movie. I had heard so much about it, and I wanted to check it out. And I think the filmmaking, I got to give props, and I can't wait to see what Andy Kaiser comes up with next. I think he's an underrated director. I think he has some good stuff in him, and I can't wait to see some future projects from him. So props to you guys on that. But, yeah, and I mean, the cast, should we even get into the cast? I mean, is this even, should we even?
Sure, why not?
Well, the cast happened to include Doug and Scott L. and Bonnie and our very own Shawnee. Our very own Sean. Yay! With Sean, I couldn't tell the difference between how you are in real life and your character, but...
Hey, what do you call the guy that mops up after the porn thing? That was me. What do you call the mop boy in the porn movie?
Sean.
Oh my God.
I call him Sean.
That's what Sean. I did. That should be new trivia. Who do you call the guy that mops up after porn scenes? The ghost man.
Yeah.
You call him the ghost man.
Now you see me, now you don't, everybody.
That's his handle. But, mm-hmm. No, it was a great movie. And like I said, I don't want people to assume that I'm judging the movie based on who was in it. Because if it sucked, I would tell you it sucked. And everybody knows Gorgel doesn't hold back. I don't care if Bonnie was in it. I'd rip Bonnie a new one if she was bad. And they came in there. I mean, you guys are not professional actors. You guys, you know, don't have some fancy school credits behind you. And you guys went in there and you ad-libbed and you just lived your parts. And you guys were just showing everybody, hey, these people really, you know, these are real people in the paranormal community. These are real people that are out there. And, I mean, yeah, it's by no means is it like, you know, a $20 million Transformers movie. You know, it doesn't have that kind of, you know, budget and technology, but for what it was incredible. And I think everybody needs to see it, and it has a great message behind it. It's totally supportive of, you know, everybody reconnecting in the paranormal community, which is definitely missing, you know, nowadays. And I think it's just a fabulous film. And it's a comedy. Who doesn't like comedy? And I mean, those people who are intensely involved in the paranormal community, you're gonna get all the jokes. You're gonna be like, oh God, that's hysterical. So it's a great movie, and I think everybody needs to pick it up.
Now, you were talking about the fact that it delved into the personalities of the paranormal investigators and things like that, and it really did go to a lot of extremes, and I think that's why I just fell so apart laughing in the theater. Because a lot of people, I think, might watch this and see a little bit of themselves in some of these characters and get angry.
Exactly.
But I just saw the extremes and just fell apart.
That and the fact that you were drunk.
Well, that's the whole point of a satire.
No, Sean, I was not the one who was drunk.
Hey, we won't talk about the beer bong that we did, okay? All right? Stays, what goes on G&D stays in G&D.
Oh, yeah, but, sure.
No, but
I'm just done trying to cover for you guys. Forget it. Never mind.
No, that's exactly what makes a satire a satire, is what you were saying, Nathan, is that you have to be extreme. You have to be a little outlandish because, I mean, you know, if you weren't, it'd be a documentary. You know, it wouldn't be a satire. And, I mean, they did take points of certain stereotypes in the paranormal community, and they went extreme with them. But I think that's why everybody can laugh, is because, you know, you see certain people and you're like, oh yeah, you know, and you crack jokes or whatever, how normal people, you know, you crack jokes about things and, you know, you're thinking totally in the extreme and, you know, you just have fun with it. And, you know, it's not out to hurt anybody. It's just a comedy, you know, it takes points of stereotypes and blows them up. And I mean, that's exactly what a satire is. And so, I mean, you know, I think
satire.
The ties have been head on.
Satire.
You having a Beavis and Butthead moment?
No, Sean's just stuck in a loop.
Yeah. He's like, I'm looking this word up. I'm looking it up. What is going on? What are we talking about?
Not
where am I?
Gigi, the day you know where we are during one of these shows, you can take over.
Which might be today, ladies and gentlemen. The Ghostman Demon Hunter show is now the Gigi show.
That's kind of scary. I don't think any of us wants to know where any of us are at any time, because that's scary. It's a scary proposition right there.
I'm just writing down all the apologies I have to make to people after this show.
Tonight, live on the G&D show.
I mean, you know, obviously, Sean, what'd you think about it? I mean, apart from the fact that you were in it, if you could keep a semi, you know, neutral view of it. What did you think of the message that the film had?
To tell you the truth about the message, I thought it was great, but I was pretty bored until we got to that part with that hot-looking guy with the tight package that had the ghost in front of him.
Kenny Biddle?
No. I think it was the ghost man.
Oh, I thought they were talking about Bonnie. I wasn't sure. I was like, wait.
The guy with the tight package. What are you talking about, Gigi? You have another message to get out there. It's... Bonnie's going to hunt you down.
What goes on at the convention stays at the convention.
That's funny. I remember that. I think that came from Miranda and Becky Ray.
We have to give props to them.
Absolutely.
They were great girls. That was the first time I'd gotten to meet them was this weekend in Decatur, and I think they're absolutely fantastic. So, hey guys, how's it going?
Hey Gigi, you need and they miss you. Everybody says they miss you in the chat room. You need to get in there and mix it up.
Well, Gigi's on her phone tonight, Sean. So
that's not what I heard you say, but okay, miss me. They miss me in the chat room. Okay, all right. I thought we were busting the family rating loose. I got scared. I don't know.
I was looking for the beep. You know, I just.
I was hoping you had your finger on the button.
I'm sitting on the other side of the room at this time, Gigi. I'm sitting at the other side of the room, just saying, forget it. I've turned off the recorder. This one's going into like the forever lost, the lost archives of the G&D show. I don't know.
You know, I always thought that these paranormal conferences would be dry and boring, but when I started doing them, guys, I tell you, it's like Vegas, man. Whatever happens there stays there.
Exactly.
You never know what's going to happen. It's crazy.
Actually, it should be. I think the real thing is whatever Sean does. Wherever we're at stays wherever we're at.
Well, see, that's crazy. That's crazy, though, Gigi. I was off my game last weekend in Decatur, but guys, rest assured.
I didn't see a difference.
The Ghost Man is on his game, and we will be ready to rock out in July or June. June.
Mm-hmm.
So you guys got to come to the Festival of June.
The Festival of June. The Festival of June. We will
the American Ghost Conference, Sean. The American Ghost Conference.
In beautiful Decatur, Illinois.
But
perhaps it won't be so bitter and cold as it was
you know, just
there.
Just a little topic before we finish up here, Gigi, because we're going to have to wrap up, to give out there is the fact that they are in the middle of filming The American Ghost Watchers 2.
That's what I heard, that the sequel's up. And I heard that perhaps, Nathan, are you having a hand in this?
I have been asked to portray a tiny role in it because they're adding some new characters. I will be apparently playing the Reverend Nigel Feelgood. And
Demon Hunter's got his hand on everything, folks, including me.
And Troy Taylor will be in the next one as the paranormal author Chaps Johnson.
Chaps.
Yes.
Good time.
So, copyright infringement.
No, seriously, guys.
Courtesy of
that's all I have to say is you know, props to the Kaisers because I had heard a lot of hype about this film and actually getting to see it, it lives up to the hype. It was funny. It had a message. It had a point. It wasn't stale. It wasn't boring. It wasn't shot, you know, so amateurishly that it ruined the production. You know, it was actually a great. I'd have to give props, man. I'm surprised that they said this was their first one that they had shot or whatever, because this does not look, you know, this looks like they've been doing this a while. So I have to give them props because that's wow. And you get a wow in my book, guys. That's something, you know.
Yeah.
But, no, I think it's great. And I think everybody needs to see it. So
well, Gigi,
American Ghost Watchers.
I know you don't rate films that are indie films, so I'm not going to ask you for a rating, but you know, maybe you could just give some people a little bit of a little kick to what else what the whole film brought together said to you, you know, on a scale. You know,
if you'd like me to rate it, I will rate it.
No, I won't ask Gigi to rate an indie film. I would never do that. That is our rule, no rating of indie films. But American Ghost Watchers, ladies and gentlemen, you can go check it out at AspiroProductions.com.
Tell me, guys, it's as much as I am, you know, very critical of movies and everything. This was a great movie, and I'd have to say it was probably the best movie at the Decatur Fest. So,
well, Gigi, we are already into our next guest time, and we still have to play a break, so we're going to have to go, and we will talk to you again next week.
Sounds good, guys. I will be back with a lot of gory goodies for you.
All right, Gigi, we will talk to you soon.
All right, love you guys.
You too.
Bye, sweet.
Bye.
All right, Sean, we're going to have to take a quick break. And when
cut
we
her off while she was saying bye.
Well, I'm just lost at this point, Sean. We've got a very important guest coming up, and I don't know what's going on.
Yes, we do. Yes, we do. Guys, stick around, because up next we've got Stanton T. Friedman, author of the Flying Saucers and Science book. It's coming up next. So get ready for Little Green Men up next tonight.
And don't forget, so hold on, Sean, because we got to remind people that they will be able to call in and talk to Stanton Friedman at 605-475-8509. Our ID number for the show is 555-1081. You can get that number off our website at www.ghostanddemon.com. If you want to ask a question, you just have to press 1-1. And we'll be right back.
1-1, guys. Stick around.
The Darker Side of the Moon is a listener's guide to the creepy, the spooky, and the unexplained. The Darker Side is an alternative variety show that delves deep into the shadowy secrets of just about everything, from the occult to dark comedy. Sometimes serious, but mostly fun. Our show has a little for everyone. Join me, Becky Ray, and Laura Moon Thursday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern. That's 8 p.m. Central and 6 p.m. Pacific at DarkerSideRadio.com.
You were further away right here than you. Welcome to The Deadline, podcast of the New Jersey Ghost Hunters Society. Get your weekly download to all things ghostly and paranormal, and then some. Test your knowledge of the paranormal with haunted trivia. Email your otherworldly experiences for parashare, and listen in to the rants and useless banter of Laura and Brian. If they've got an opinion on the paranormal,
or even a great pub,
they'll talk about it. The Deadline can be easily downloaded from the NJGHS.net website. You can also listen to archive shows at PodcastAlley.com. Say, while at Podcast Alley, cast a vote for The Deadline, because everyone knows that at some point in life, you have to meet the deadline.
Hi, this is Rosemary Ellen Guiley, and you're listening to the Ghost Man and Demon Hunter Show.
Well, after all that, we're back, and that was A.G. Silver with Can't You See? You can get more information about them off of GarageBand.com.
And that was a hot song, Demon Hunter. Kudos to you and kudos to that band. But I tell you what, guys, what we've all been waiting for all day long, tonight's guest, Mr. Stanton T. Friedman, author of the upcoming hot bestseller book, I'm sure, Flying Saucers and Science, is in the house with us tonight, Demon Hunter.
Well, that is awesome. Welcome to the show, Stan.
Glad to be on, especially New Jersey. You know, I grew up in New Jersey.
Did you? I did too. I grew up in Newton, New Jersey.
Well, I mean, I left after I got to be 19. But...
you paid the fine and escaped?
Yeah, that's about the size of it. It's a great place to be from. Far from.
As now, I tell people all the time, if you can afford the cost to get out of New Jersey, don't go back.
What?
No, I love New Jersey. I love New Jersey. Mark and Mark, our friends from Weird New Jersey, are there. Our friends Laura and Brian from New Jersey Ghost Hunters are out there. My family's out there. My best friend Eddie's out there. I just, I escaped, so...
That's great. Let me go ahead and give out a shout out to all the Hoosiers out there because the Ghost Man's from Indiana.
Yes, but Stanton
I live in Indiana too, you know.
Are you really?
I lived there for 3 years. My folks were both from Indiana.
Oh my goodness, that's why I love you, Stanton. You got Hoosier in your blood.
Yep.
So Stanton.
I still have relatives back in northern Indiana, and I lived in Indianapolis for 3 years.
Wow. I go to work every day out at the airport, Indianapolis International.
But now, Stan, you're up in Canada, right?
I'm in Fredericton, New Brunswick, Canada. That's east of Maine and an hour ahead of Eastern time. We have our own time zone, the Atlantic time zone. And we got more darn snow than I want.
You probably get taxed for your own time zone, don't you? I mean,
what?
How's the taxes like there, Stanton? Because they're killing us here.
What did you say? How are taxes back here?
Yes.
How the taxes? Because they're killing us here in the States.
Oh. I'm not understanding the words. We have a lousy connection.
Let me see if I can fix that up at all, Stanton. Hold on one second. Hold on. I'm going to reconnect you. You'll have to hang up your phone. I will reconnect you right away.
Okay.
All right? I want to bring him back on, Sean, but I want to bring him on a clear line. So.
Okay, let's do that, Demon Hunter.
We don't want to have a whole show without him being able to understand us. I can barely understand you as it is. I don't want our guests to have a trouble, too.
Well, I'm not a rocket scientist, but I can pretend to be Stanton tonight.
No. No, you can't, Sean. People will know.
They might.
Let's see if the phone rings or if he gets it on the first ring there. For every time the phone rings, Sean has to take a drink. Oh, no. It was busy. So let's see.
Stanton.
Think he heard me say he had to hang out?
Yeah, I think he did.
Okay. Let's try this again. It says it's connecting. It's ringing good. That means the phone is home.
How's that?
That sounds better to me. Can you hear us okay?
So far.
That's great. See, I didn't want to risk anything with, you having trouble hearing Sean, because it's hard enough to understand Sean as it is, so. So we are back. We have Stanton Friedman. Stanton, you are from, you are living in Canada. You're from New Jersey. You were in the, you lived in the Hoosier State. We now have some great background on you.
Well, I've also lived in California and in Pennsylvania and in Ohio.
Wow, you get around.
I set a record for working on canceled government-sponsored advanced research and development programs, I think.
Now, during any of this time, since they call you the father of Roswell, did at any time you live in New Mexico?
No, I've spent a lot of time there, but no, I've never lived in New Mexico. I happen to, as a matter of fact, I got started with Major Jesse Marcel by being in, of all places, Baton Rouge, Louisiana.
Oh.
Not in New Mexico. I was doing a three interviews at a television station because of my lecture that evening at Louisiana State University. I've spoken at over 600 colleges, so this is just another point on the road, you know. And I was supposed to do three interviews at the TV station back in 1978. Did the first two, and the third reporter was nowhere to be found. And the station manager, who knew the person who brought me to the station, knew I had other things to do. He was apologetic. He was giving me coffee. He was looking at his watch. No cell phones back then, you know. And out of the blue, and I mean that literally, he says, you know, the guy you ought to talk to is Jesse Marcel. And being the brilliant investigator that I am, I said, who's he? He said, his answer really shook me up. He handled pieces of the wreckage of one of those saucers you're interested in when he was in the military. What?
Oh, man.
And, what do you know about him? Where is he? He lives in Houma. Now, I didn't know where Houma, Louisiana was. I've been there since. He's a great guy. We're old ham radio buddies. You really ought to talk to him. And a reporter showed up. So there was a 20, 30-minute window of opportunity. I had a great response that night at the lecture. And the next day from the airport, I called information and got a number for Jesse Marcel, and we talked. He told me a good part of his story. I mentioned the station manager's name, and he didn't have a precise date, and I knew that the summer of 47 was a very busy time for UFOs, with Kenneth Arnold's sighting on June 24th and so forth. A few months later, I'm in Bemidji, Minnesota, everybody's favorite town, at Bemidji State College. And after my lecture, somebody asked me, ever hear anything about a crash saucer in New Mexico? Well, yes. Tell me more. And they told me about their friend Barney Barnett, who worked for the government. He had told them about stumbling. He worked for the Soil Conservation Service now, out in western New Mexico. And he had stumbled across the saucer out there, and he had told his boss, and, you know, I shared this with Bill Moore the very next day. He was living in Minnesota at that time, and he had a third story, this one from the Flying Saucer Review in England, about an English actor, Huey Green, driving across the country from L.A. to Philadelphia, and hearing on the radio about a crash saucer in New Mexico. He figured it would be a big story when he got to Philadelphia, but nothing. Well, he could pin down the date because that wasn't a trip you made very often back then. You can imagine what the roads were like in 1947. He says, early July 47. So Bill Moore goes to the University of Minnesota Library, Periodicals Department, starts looking. There's the story. Confirmed what Jesse said, and gave us the names of a bunch of other people, and over the next 2 years, we found 62 people connected with Roswell. That led to the first book, The Roswell Incident, by Bill and Charles Berlitz, and Bill and I did 90% of the research, right? Charles wrote the book, and you know, that was 1980. By 1985, we had found 92 people. And then I instigated the Unsolved Mysteries program on NBC TV.
Okay.
and had a role in that and so forth. And that was seen by 28 million people, incidentally. That's back when the networks were supreme. Well, you know, before cable companies became big. And, you know, when the Peter Jennings mockumentary of February 24th, 2005 played, it was seen by less than 14 million people. So that was on ABC. But, so, you know, I've been at it. And then because of that program, we got a lot of response to that program. And my book, Crash at Corona, still available, listed on my website at www.stantonfriedman.com. And Don Berliner and I wrote that. And,
now, Stanton, was that the crash after drinking Corona, or was that...
No, smoking it.
Okay.
Well, you know, I thought it was funny that you said you'd spoken at 300 colleges, because that's about as many as Sean has been kicked out of. So
600.
The whole thing too with getting all the places you've gone and gotten all this information from and all these people, this must be like now full time. There's must be no other time in your life for anything.
It's been full. I gave my first lecture in 1967, and so for 41 years I've been speaking and writing and researching, and it's been a little quiet the past year because worked on the book Captured, the Betty and Barney Hill UFO Experience with Kathleen Marden, Betty's niece. That came out last July. And then I've been working, Flying Saucers and Science should be out in May. Finally got it in a month ago, and so I haven't been doing as much lecturing, but I will be... For those who like to travel, I will be in Aztec, New Mexico, everybody's favorite town.
Ooh.
For the anniversary of the Aztec crash, March 28th, 29th, I guess.
How come we don't get invited to like Aztec, New Mexico, Sean?
I don't know. I'm waiting on that. I figured Stanton Friedman, he's our way in right there, deep.
There you go. There you go.
What did you want to know?
Well, we were saying why we'd never get invited to places like that.
Well, yeah, I'm inviting you now. Come on and attend the program. There'll be several speakers. It should be exciting, including Scott Ramsey, who has done an enormous amount of research on the Aztec crash of March 48. And a lot of people poo-poo it. I did, too, originally. But once I saw what Scott had done... I'm very impressed, and so he's talked to a lot of military people. We're always looking for more witnesses, but they're dying on us, you know?
It's yeah.
One of those bad things. We're racing the Undertaker, and you know what? Normally we lose.
You know what, Stanton? You have to excuse my ignorance. I forgot the name of the first alien abductee. She was on Unsolved Mysteries the other night. Do you remember her name?
The first recorded.
Do you mean Betty Hill?
Yes, sir. She passed away, the late Betty Hill. I actually caught that on the History Channel the other day. She was talking about her experience on the alien ship.
Well, yeah, Betty's gone, and Barney was gone way back in 69. And the co-author of the book, Captured, is Kathleen Marden, who's Betty's niece, has all her papers, was very close to her. She heard about the encounter... the day after it happened, when Betty called Kathleen's mother, Betty's sister, and she's lived quite close to her for the last 10 years of her life and helped care for her and before she died. And, that's a big story. She wasn't the first abductee. That was the first story that got written up and investigated and so forth, probably better than 95% of the other cases that have come along, because... A, it took a lot of time, separate sessions with Betty and Barney. B, the man who did the hypnosis to find out what happened during the missing two-hour time span. They remembered seeing the UFO, and then they got home 2 hours later than they should have, was Dr. Benjamin Simon. Now, he was a psychiatrist who, in World War II, developed a technique using medical hypnosis of helping shell-shock war veterans. They didn't call it PTSD back then, but that's what they were talking about, post-traumatic stress syndrome. And he actually headed a hospital with 3,000 beds for guys from World War II and had a better batting average than anybody else. He also made a movie, which I have seen, Let There Be Light, about his treatment of the – he didn't make it. The military made it of the shell shock war veterans. So he didn't know anything about flying saucers. But he did know how to get people to relive suppressed experiences. And he is, we mentioned in the book, that he stated that the emotional intensity in Betty and Barney, they've had separate hypnosis sessions, and he taped them all. And amnesia was induced after each session, so they couldn't talk to each other about what did you say, what did you say, you know. And this went on for months. And the emotional intensity was greater than that, on occasion, it was greater than that that Dr. Simon had seen with any of the veterans. So we're talking about pretty serious stuff. And he tried to convince Barney that he was only sort of mimicking some dreams that Betty had within a week or two, starting within a week or two, about the experience, which included some abduction scenario, but Kathleen is able to show in the book a comparative analysis of what Barney said, what Betty said, what the dreams, what her notes on the dreams said, and clearly Barney was not echoing Betty's dreams. So you hear about prejudice on the part of abduction researchers. Oh, they're just putting thoughts in the minds of the abductees. Well, here's a situation where it's just the reverse. Dr. Simon was basically trying to talk them out of there having been an abduction experience. So, and I got involved, and people are probably wondering, what the heck is a nuclear physicist doing involved with an abduction case? Well, I had met Betty and Barney both way back in 68. Barney died in 69, so I was lucky to meet him before he died. I don't. You may know people who can cross the line, but I can't. So, I was the first to publish about the star map work. Betty under hypnosis is reliving how she's trying to get the. They had finished their examination of her, and Barney was in a separate room on board the craft. And so she wants to know where they're from. Now, Betty knew who she was. Her family dates back to the 1640s in New Hampshire. A social worker. She had her feet on the ground back then. And so she says, I know you're not from around here, the understatement of the month. And so the guy, one of the aliens, shows her a what I can only call probably a hologram, a three-dimensional star map. It seemed to have depth to it, about 2 feet by 2 feet by 3 feet, points of light that are supposedly stars, and different kinds of lines, solid lines and dashed lines and real heavy multiple lines between the stars. And she says, well, where are you on the map? And wise guy alien says, do you know where you are? And she says, I don't know anything about astronomy. Well, how can I tell you where I'm from if you don't know where you're at? End of discussion. Now, well, Dr. Simon, and I'll admire his patience. I mean, it's bad enough. Betty's a social worker. Barney was very active in the civil rights community. And they were respectable people, well thought of it by the church and community. But what's this business? There were trade routes, some of those lines, and expeditions. So he asked Betty if she can remember what the map looked like and gives her a post-hypnotic suggestion. Please draw it later on, if and only if you can remember it accurately. So she draws it at home. And she brings it in, and it's in the book, The Interrupted Journey, which came out in 66, and by John Fuller, a fine writer, and the book was a bestseller all around the world. And later, incidentally, some people may remember the UFO incident on NBC, a television program starring James Earl Jones and Estelle Parsons.
Okay.
They were a mixed couple. Betty was white, Barney was black. James Earl Jones played Barney, of course. And the thing is that the question is whether that map means anything. It's in the book. Well, a woman named Marjorie Fish did something nobody else had ever done. She built 26 three-dimensional models of our local galactic neighborhood to see if she could find a 3D pattern that matched the two-dimensional pattern that Betty had drawn. And it was with great difficulty. At first, there were no patterns that matched. And the hard part, this may seem a little strange being 2008, but we're talking late 60s, the hard part was the distance data. Because astronomers weren't going anywhere, and the methods of measuring distance at that time weren't very accurate, you'd get five different star catalogs for a particular star, you'd get five different distances. And you can't build a three-dimensional model without knowing the distances. I mean, to look at a star, you need two dimensions, really, two angles. And it doesn't matter how far away the star is, it's what angle you look at. But if you're building a model, it does matter.
Now,
anyway, to make a long story short, Marjorie finally found the identity of all the stars. Turns out, in the map, it turns out they're all sun-like stars, which is only true of about 5% of the stars in the local neighborhood. And it turns out they're in a plane, like thin slices of pepperoni on a big pizza, which is rather unusual. It makes it a lot easier to travel, but this was totally unexpected. And it turns out that all the stars in the pattern are sun-like, and all the stars in that volume of space that are sun-like are part of the pattern.
Oh.
None are left out, and that tells us where the base stars were. Zeta 1 and Zeta 2 reticuli, to which people normally reply, who cares? Never heard of them. You know?
But whatever you say, Captain Kirk.
Well, the kicker here is that it turns out that they are a unique pair of stars. They're the closest to each other pair of sun-like stars in our entire local neighborhood. And they're just down the street. We're not talking another galaxy. We're not talking across our own galaxy, the Milky Way. We're talking 39.2 light years away. It's around the corner.
Yeah.
Southern sky. You can't see them from where we are. But and they're only an eighth of a light year apart. Now think about that for a minute. That's 35 times closer to each other, those two stars, than the sun is to the next star over. So we're out in the boonies.
Yeah.
These guys got next door neighbors. And, oh, one other little detail. They're a cool billion years older than the sun.
Oh. Well,
and from a planet around one looking at the other, it's visible all day long.
But Stanton, that would mean we're not the center of the universe if there are stars older
than
us out there.
Well, I hate to tell you this. Really, I do, especially on a popular radio program. But no, we're not the center of the universe.
Hey, well,
we're not the center of the galaxy. We're not even the center of the neighborhood.
You know, Stan, one of the things I wanted to ask you was, I actually had people over last night, and I told them I was having you on the show, and they were bringing up Betty and Barney. And I honestly...
Maybe they read the book.
They must have. I myself, you know, we talk about paranormal investigating, but our bit of it, ghost hunting, is just a small section. And I, honestly, everything I know about UFOs, I pretty much learned on The X-Files. So, you know, they were...
You mean you didn't go to my website, www.stantonfriedman.com?
Well, I did after I couldn't... I did after I couldn't answer their questions. But I was sitting there talking to them, and they were talking about the fact that Betty and Barney were respectable people.
Very.
Were either of them like professors or had PhDs or?
Say that again.
Were either of them like professors or PhDs?
No,
or...
Betty was a social worker for the state of New Hampshire.
Right.
Barney worked for the post office,
but
was very active in the civil rights community. Civil rights were a big thing back then, and they were an interracial couple, and Betty got involved in civil rights, too. They were invited to, Johnson's inauguration. because he remembered the civil rights movement and all that sort of stuff. And now Dr. Simon had, his training was at Harvard. And there were a number of scientists who got involved around this case. And that's discussed in the book Captured, because some of the scientists wanted to, how should I put this? They were trying to see if Betty and Barney could make contact, send out thought waves and, you know, draw them in. And these guys would then observe them. That wasn't Betty and Barney's idea. It was these other scientists. A couple of them worked for IBM, as a matter of fact. And, you know, they had friends, I should mention, they were from Portsmouth, New Hampshire. And Pease Air Force Base is just outside Portsmouth. It's closed now, but it was very active back then. And they knew a lot of people on the base, not surprisingly. And they reported observing a UFO, not the abduction part, because they didn't know about it at the time, the day after it happened. And so the case also, I should add, that there were two articles in Look magazine based on the book by John Fuller. Look was a big publication back then. And so a lot of people, I didn't fully appreciate the fact, maybe because I'm so old, but a lot of people didn't get started on UFOs until they read The Interrupted Journey or the two articles in Look magazine or saw that television movie. So the Betty and Barney Hill case was an important case because Fuller did a fine job and because these people are respectable and Simon is respectable. And some of the attacks on the case, and I deal with them, I'm sort of the heavy in the book in taking on the nasty, noisy negativists, as I call them, because some really stupid things have been said about the case and about the star map work. And, you know, one of the things that I've found is that there are four basic rules for UFO debunkers, and they probably work with ghosts, too. Don't bother me with the facts. My mind's made up. What the public doesn't know, I'm not going to tell them. If you can't attack the data, attack the people. It's easier. And do your research by proclamation. Investigation's too much trouble, and nobody will know the difference anyway.
Well, no, that doesn't work in ghost hunting because everybody wants to investigate so they can get their own TV show about it. So
I don't have my own TV show. Come on.
Well, when you do, Stanton, we'll come on and be on it with you. Stanton, we're going to have to take like a 1 minute break. When we come back, people are dying on the chat room. They want to hear about alien bodies and, the government hiding alien bodies and stuff like that. If we can talk about that. So we'll take a quick break and we'll be right back. Is that okay with you, Sean?
Stick around, guys. We got the father of Roswell, Stanton T. Friedman, up next talking about alien bodies. Stick around.
The American Ghost Society's 12th annual Haunted American Conference will be held June 20th and 21st in Decatur, Illinois.
Hosted by Troy Taylor at the Haunted Lincoln Theater.
Speakers include Patrick Burns, John Zaffis, Rosemary Ellen Guiley, and Keith Age.
Also, Lynn Adams, Luke Nowarski, Dale Kazmarek, Stephen LeChance, and psychic Ken Bird.
Don't miss this two-day event with special investigations and tours sold on a first-come, first-served basis.
To register, guys, go to www.prairieghost.com/conference.html or just call 1-888-446-7859.
Broadcasting live from this event will be the Ghostly Talk radio crew and Nathan S. and Sean B. from the Ghostman and Demon Hunter show.
Witness a special live performance on the Lincoln stage from Spectrum Men, the Atlanta horror punk band made up of real-life ghost hunters.
Admission remains the same as 1997, $50 per person.
It's the 12th Annual Haunted America Conference in Decatur, Illinois with Troy Taylor. Register now.
I then reach out, touch ghosts with my hand, and lock them into place until I choose to let them go.
Join us on a real-life ghost hunt with Dr. Gary Hawkins and his team of investigators.
It
came from behind you. How the heck did it come from behind you?
To make that kind of shadow, there is no... The only light is from that way.
That was amazing. There was no light. The camera's facing the same direction it is now. It couldn't have been. I mean, there could have been no shadow passed behind. Unless it wasn't something that normally creates a shadow.
Well, you know what? I don't know what to say about that. I mean, I can't explain it. That was weird.
That's the spirits of the Rockcliffe Mansion. Seeing is believing.
Buy online. Shop.
www.ezproductions.net.
Hi, this is Jim Willis of Weird Ohio and Ghost of Ohio fame. And I got to tell you something. The Ghostman and Demon Hunter show rocks my world. Check them out at ghostanddemon.com and tell them Jim Willis sent you.
Whoa. And we're back with Stanton
Welcome
Freeman.
Welcome back, everybody.
You still there, Stanton?
I'm still here.
Oh, well, yeah, people are just dying in the chat room to hear about alien bodies and the government covering up the existence of alien bodies. And
I got a whole bunch of questions, Stan, that everybody from the chat room has sent to me.
I'm willing to hear questions.
Go ahead, hey, Sean.
Do we got anybody on the phone lines?
We do not have anybody on the phone lines right now. If they want to call in, like I said, that number is 605-475-8590. You have to enter our ID number of 555-1081. And if you want us to talk to you, you have to press 1-1 and raise your hand. You can get that number on our website at www.ghostanddemon.com. But now back to Stan.
Now, Stan, everybody knows that I love you, right? I'm understood.
Sean, you're cutting out.
Yeah, I need some feedback.
Okay, you might want to turn your mic down a little. And while you're doing that, I'll ask Dan. The alien bodies that we all know they found alien bodies. We've been told at Roswell, and I recently heard about them finding alien bodies in Mexico. Was that the Aztec?
Well, Aztec crash? Is in New Mexico, as Roswell. Was.
Oh, okay.
And there were bodies found there, and it appears that there were bodies found in Chihuahua. There's a book by Mark Uriarte, and I forget his co-author's name all of a sudden. There's a book about the Mexican Roswell. And, of course, we've got plenty of abduction cases where people see live beings as opposed to dead ones. You know, what can I say? They're little guys. I mean, it's really one of the funny parts about the government explanation for the stories about bodies at Roswell. This is the most imaginative explanation. Crash test dummies. Now, what they don't tell you, of course, is that there were none dropped until 6 years after Roswell. So we have time travel for crash test dummies, which is pretty neat. Secondly, what they don't tell you, and I got this from the man who was in charge of the program, for some reason, even though his picture is in the Air Force report about this, they didn't talk to him, apparently. I did. And he pointed out to me in person that the bodies, the crash test dummies, because of the kind of experiments they were doing, ejection seats and that sort of thing, the crash test dummies had to be the same size and weight as pilots. And as a matter of fact, they were 6 feet tall and 175 pounds. Now, there's no way you can morph one of those into a guy 4 foot tall, skinny little guy with a big head.
Sounds like Demon Hunter.
Oh, that wasn't nice, Sean. But at least your feedback is gone.
Hey, there it is.
Good. Well, the kicker here is, in other words, that the aliens don't seem to be identical, you know, peas from a pod or anything like that. But in the Hill case, they were basically your short little guy with a big head and big eyes and no hair and a slit for a mouth and a couple of holes for a nose and for ears. They were sufficiently different from us. You'd recognize they weren't from around here. Well, maybe in New York City you couldn't tell. But there are other cases where there are somewhat larger ones, somewhat smaller ones. There are some that people have described as being sort of reptilian. But by and large are your little gray guys who obviously are not a combination of a science fiction monster, you know, an octopus and a zebra combined with What? An eagle. Hey, I just made up a good-looking one.
Sounds like one of the angels from the Old Testament. But
yeah, they seem to be humanoid is the point, and two arms, two legs, a head, and a body in its simplest form. So, yes, bodies have been collected. That's a neat way of putting that. I guess when they're dead, you collect them. And apparently one of the survivors, there were actually two crashes at the time of Roswell, one near Corona. That's why my book is Crash at Corona. It's a small town, and the crash site was much closer to Corona than it was to Roswell. This is out in the boonies. I don't know how many people have been to New Mexico, but to get down around that part of the world, I took a group of Japanese journalists around. We went to the crash sites and stuff. And would you believe we didn't see another car or another person for 54 miles?
Wow.
And frankly, there's no way to do that in Japan. So we're really talking out in the boonies here and in New Mexico. And I had an English journalist call me, and she couldn't understand why I didn't just park my car alongside the road, go in with the metal detector, and find pieces of wreckage. And I said, gee, that's a great idea, except there's no road. What do you mean there's no road? Of course there's a road, she says. I say, ma'am, you ever been to New Mexico? No. Well, it's twice the size of England and Wales combined, but it had 1 million people back then, and you had 50 million people. That give you some idea? There's a little difference, we're going to say.
Yeah. Well, some people are asking us where you think they're keeping the bodies now.
Well, that's a good question. And, of course, I do not have either an appropriate security clearance or a need to know for such data on an official basis. I've been given several answers. One I like the most, we know that some of the wreckage and some of the bodies went back to Wright-Patterson Air Force Base in Ohio, Dayton, Ohio. That's where the standard place where you took captured enemy equipment. If you could convince a Russian pilot to bring in a MiG, that's one did. They paid him $1 million, and they took that to Wright-Patterson. So that's the standard place. And somebody told me who did a lot of work out there. I've been there many times. It's a big facility, incidentally, about 1,000 buildings, at times 25,000 people working there. So we're not talking about a little shack out in the desert someplace. And one guy suggested to me that he thought he knew where they were. They used to have a nuclear reactor there, a test reactor, and you'd expose samples to radiation and see what happened and that sort of thing. And he said there's plenty of room around that. You stick the bodies there and put up big radiation signs, and nobody's going to be messing around there. And that's as good an answer as I've had. Now, obviously, some people say, well, how about Area 51? Right. Well, first of all, it didn't exist in 1947. Mm-hmm. Second, it might very well have a place where they study alien bodies. There's a lot of it underground, and people get upset at that. I said, there are a lot of underground bases. Why? Well, keep away from the spy satellites, and in case a nuclear weapon gets dropped, maybe people have forgotten that there was a Cold War on for a long time.
They don't teach that in schools anymore.
You know, I wonder what the kids do learn about
that. Hey, Stanton, I got to ask you something, though. Tell me if this rings a bell with you. Lucky Point, Indiana. Being a Hoosier yourself, Lucky Point, Indiana, what do you think about the UFO sightings out that way?
Don't know anything about them. I only lived there for 3 years, and that's been a long time.
Okay, well, let's try another one here. We got Carrie Collies from the chat room. She says, is the government trying to silence you in any way?
You know, that's an interesting question. I've had a couple of people say, how come you're still alive, Stan? Because I'm healthy, that's why.
If they killed you, it'd be too obvious.
I don't know. I would put it a different way. I'd like to think positively. Maybe I'm doing what they would like to see done, that is get the public ready for when the big release of data comes, when the cosmic Watergate gets opened up. And, you know, I've spoken in all 50 states and 16 other countries, and anybody wanted to take me out, I mean, I have a live answering service. My number's on the website, www.stantonfriedman.com, and they're told, my answering service has instructions to tell people where I am and, you know, when I'll be getting somewhere. And I've made a number of trips from Albuquerque to Roswell. It's just under 200 miles, and most of it, there's nothing there. I mean, you know, you're out in the middle of nowhere. It's easy driving, you understand. So if somebody wanted to take me out, there's been plenty of opportunity, and they haven't. So I must assume that I'm doing what they want, and I can't live my life looking over my shoulder. And incidentally, at the website, you'll see an article called Government UFO Lies. I don't mean lies down. I'm saying tells falsehoods, tells untruths. And I give examples for the Air Force, for the CIA, for the FBI, a few other NRO, NSA. You know, lying seems to be of epidemic proportions when it comes to the government talking about flying saucers. But I document them. I don't just say, oh, they're lying all the time. Here's what they said. Here's what the facts are. So if Uncle Sam really wanted to get mad at me and read my website, you know, there's no law against lying. I think you guys know that with the radio show.
Sure, yeah.
There are laws against libel and slander, but, you know, lying is something the government does a lot of, and I'm sure that comes as a surprise to your listeners. I'm sure they think the government always tells the truth, but... You know, those weapons of mass destruction that somehow weren't
Hey, the aliens took those.
That's right, they did.
hey, that's a great explanation.
you know what, Stanton, I got another question. How true is the MIB, the Men in Black? How true is that? Do these guys exist? Well, and if so, where from?
I think they've been way overstated. John Keel, who has some very strange thinking patterns, has made a big deal about Men in Black. And, you know, it's kind of funny. I once told a reporter that I'd had a Men in Black experience. I was laughing when I said it. I said I was at a conference in Oklahoma and had a call. I was staying at somebody's home, and I had a call from somebody who'd heard me the first day, and he and his friends wanted to take me to lunch on the second day. So I told them where I was, and up they drive in a big black Cadillac, and they all wore black suits. We went out and had a fine lunch, and nothing happened. Well, soon an article appeared in a tabloid saying that I was talking about my Men in Black experience. Turns out they always rented black Cadillacs, and they always wore black suits.
Nobody told you they were Hasidic. No, I...
In the middle of Oklahoma?
Well, who knows? I wanted to ask you, Stan, and this is a generalization, and I know it is, and we love generalizations because Sean and I are currently working on a ghost hunter film about generalizing, you know, stereotypes in paranormal work.
Yeah.
But, like, one of the questions I was sent during the week was, why is it that all... the abductees seem to be out in the middle of the woods somewhere getting, you know, getting, and that they all have, you know, they're all backwoods people and all this stuff.
That's total baloney. That must have been a nasty, noisy negativist who submitted that question, because take a look at Bud Hopkins' books, David Jacobs' books. Bud's had cops in New York. He's had things going, you know, in the big cities. And so is David. So, no, it's not just nuts, and it's not just out in the boonies. I mean, obviously, it's easier to pick somebody up out in the boonies.
that's what I told him. I said, around, well, where would you go?
You know, nobody Stanton, around to interfere.
Stanton, I got a question for you. You know the book, Men Are From Venus, Women From Mars? Is that the...
Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus, Sean. Obviously, yeah, Sean has not read that book.
How much truth is there to that, Stanton? I mean...
I haven't read the book, but I don't think it has anything to do with alien abduction.
I don't know. I've been out with a couple girls. I swear there's something behind those eyes, man.
Now, but to go into that, there's also the whole theory that we are... that people are the seeded people here from an alien development and that...
Well, you know, it's one of the things that's wrong with the SETI movement, you know, SETI, Silly Effort to Investigate.
we gotta come up with one of those.
You didn't know that's what it stood for?
No, but we got to come up with one of those for ghost hunting. Thank you.
I'll tell you, in my new book... What?
I was going to ask you to co-host the show, me, you, and Nathan.
Look, the one of the chapters in my new book, Flying Saucers and Science, is about the SETI movement, and I point out all the problems with it and the strange assumptions they make. And one of them, to get back to your question, is that they assume that nobody's traveling anywhere and that there has been no colonization and no migration. But you look around, and one of the chapters in the book also deals with how do you get here from there. And the SETI people never deal with the UFO evidence. They say there is no evidence. Well, I took care of that problem easily enough. They never refer to the 5 large-scale scientific studies that I talk about. I check all my audiences, incidentally, and fewer than 2% of the people have read any of those studies. And certainly if the SETI people have read them, they certainly don't mention it. They don't list it in their references or anything. But it's very important to realize that, well, I've asked the question of my audiences. I said, how many of you here had your ancestors living here 1,000 years ago? And occasionally I get a Native American, but practically never. You know,
right.
Not a high percentage. I actually spoke on a reservation one time, so I have that a bunch, but didn't ask the question then. had better sense. What I'm saying is that I, as far as I'm concerned, sure, we could be somebody's colony. If you remember that movie To Serve Man.
Right. Twilight Zone.
It was a cookbook, you remember? Yep. We could be somebody's crop. This could be the devil's island of this corner of the galaxy. And they dumped all the bad boys and girls here, and that's why we're so nasty to each other. I mean, I try to stand back and look at the planet to see it as aliens must see it. And I would say, in a simple form, we're a primitive society whose major activity is tribal warfare. How else can you explain what goes on here? I mean,
that's
you know,
they could be raising the perfect weapon.
Well, during World War II, we Earthlings killed 50 million of our own kind.
Uh-huh.
50 million. And today, the annual budget of the United States for things military is well over $500 billion, and the rest of the world's another $500 billion, and yet 30,000 children died yesterday of preventable disease and starvation. Does that make any sense?
None whatsoever.
You know, so for all we know, there could have been 10 different civilizations on this planet over the last billion years. We don't know much about the past history of the planet, and I get a real kick out of Heinrich Schliemann, who discovered the city of Troy, the remains of the city of Troy. The historian said, what are you looking for Troy for? That's all myth from the Odyssey and the Iliad. Those are stories. There was no Troy. If there was, we would know about it. I love that line. So he was rich, Schliemann was, so he could afford to pay guys to dig down 75 feet, and they found Troy. And how much of the planet have we explored down 75 feet?
Yeah.
Darn little, and that was only a few thousand years ago.
Hey, Stanton, Sean has a bunch of questions and that people have asked. We want to try to get a few more in before we run out of time, so go ahead, Sean.
Okay.
Well, Stanton, actually, Ghost Chaser from the chat room asked, why do aliens hide from us?
Well, they have been seen by us many times. If you're really asking, so how come they don't come down and say, let's go for a beer or for coffee, guys? They're not here to socialize with us, apparently. They're doing their thing. I mean, look, there's squirrels in my backyard. I don't talk to them very often, and they certainly don't talk to me. They're doing their thing, I'm doing mine.
Mine talks to me, Stanton.
That's why we make sure Sean takes his medicine.
Is that another question, Sean?
Yep, go ahead, Sean.
I you know what, Stanton, I got so many here that why do they come? When do they come? What time of day? That's a question that came out of the
well,
chat.
Okay. They're seen all times of day. The question of why they come, on my website at www.stantonfriedman.com, you'll find an article, the UFO Why Questions, W-H-Y. And one of them, of course, is, why would aliens come to this place anyway? And yeah. I have a list of something over 20 reasons, you know, from the sublime to the ridiculous. This is the honeymoon capital, this corner of the galaxy. They're being punished, spent 2 weeks near Earth. That's punishment to last a lifetime. It turns out the Earth is the densest planet in the solar system. I don't mean the people. That's probably true, too. But a cubic foot of Earth weighs more than a cubic foot of any other planet. And you say, who cares? Well, that means there are more heavy metals here. And heavy metals, I'm talking about really heavy metals. I'm not talking about lead. Osmium is twice as dense as lead. But uranium, tungsten, iridium, rhenium, all these things, they have very special properties. They're kind of rare in the neighborhood, we tell from our studies of stars. So you might steal the goodies here. And, you know, people forget. 100 and some years ago, the big use for uranium was, and not much was used, was yellow glaze for pottery.
I thought you were going to say for cakes. That was going to scare me.
But today you understand very little uranium is used for glaze for pottery.
Right.
There are things like nuclear reactors and nuclear weapons and counterweights for airplanes because it's so dense either. Zirconium. Now, most people have never heard of zirconium. The nuclear navy uses zirconium alloys for all the cladding and piping and structure in a nuclear reactor for the navy reactors because it's corrosion resistant, it's got good nuclear properties, and so forth. Who ever heard of zirconium? They had to develop a whole new technology to make stuff out of it. So there may be stuff here that we don't think is important because we're ignorant. And which aliens say, you know, I don't know, I'm glad these guys aren't using this stuff. That leaves more for us. You know, so I think the biggest reason, though, if I were to come down to one reason, I think they're here to quarantine us. I make one assumption about every advanced civilization. It's concerned about its own survival and security. Everybody we know is. That being the case, you have to keep tabs on the primitives in the neighborhood, but only close tabs on those primitives to show signs of being able to bother you. At the end of World War II, there were three signs that soon these idiot Earthlings would be out there to bother them, soon meaning 100 years or so, which is nothing on a cosmic timescale. The three signs were nuclear weapons, V-2 rockets, which were not used to deliver mail, you notice. They were used to deliver explosives. And radar as an indicator of development of electronic technology. Isn't it amazing that the only place on the planet in July 1947 where you could find all three of these technologies was southeastern New Mexico?
Mm.
That's where the first atom bomb was tested, Trinity Site, White Sands Missile Range. That's where we're firing the captured German V-2 rockets. We grabbed a whole shipload of them. Supposed to split them with England, but we didn't. And that's where we had our best radar to track the rockets, which sometimes didn't go where they were supposed to go. They were supposed to be fired to the north. A couple of them went south. Mexicans weren't very happy about that incident.
Stanton, but we're going to have to cut you off only because we've run out of time.
Oh,
I'm sorry about that.
That's, hey, you know what? This has been awesome, and we hope you'll come back sometime.
Why not?
And also, can you hang on the line while we wrap up? Because we want to talk to you a little bit after the show.
Sure.
So, but Sean and I have to take this chance to thank everybody for listening in tonight for the Ghostman and Demon Hunter show.
Absolutely, Demon Hunter. I just want to remind everybody we were talking to Stanton T. Friedman, truly one of the great Stanton. I'm a huge fan. And be sure to check out our website at www.ghostanddemon.com and log on our forums because we want to hear from you.
And if you had questions that you didn't get answered tonight, we're sorry, but you can go and find them out at www.stantonfriedman.com. And you can, unfortunately, you can't join us next week for the Ghostman and Demon Hunter show because we will not have one up live, but you can catch us on Thursday on Darker Side of the Moon Radio. We'll be live with Becky Ray and Laura Moon. So check us out there.
Wow. Stand free, guys. Hey, don't go changing ghost hunters. We won't. Good night, everybody.
We love you. Good night.
So say good night to the bad guys.